Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Some councils are auditing schools and urging a ban on the terms boy and girl.
For those who are in an open or polyamorous relationship, your relationships are holy.
A gay black woman's victim status is less than that of a black trans woman, who ranks below a black Muslim trans woman.
We don't want to just win the argument about sexuality. We want to use this as a gospel opportunity.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
So, you know, right? Because,
sure,
like, wretched, and, you know, I didn't, like, right?
Has someone called an ambulance for Todd?
This is Wretched Radio. No, I'm just learning how to communicate the way the Gen Zers are communicating these days. So here's the deal. Been working on the transcripts. John Fabara is the new host of Road Trip to Truth, which we are working on feverishly. I was going to say diligently, but that doesn't even come close to the intensity of the labor going into Road Trip to Truth. We went to different university campuses in the Bible Belt, about 191. I thought it was 161, but there were more. Almost 200 kids we talked to on the university campuses. George Barna or Lifeway would be very pleased with those numbers. And I'm working through the transcripts, and I noticed communication is changing. Is this a big theological issue? No, but it is an evangelistic issue, and it is a didactic teaching issue. How this generation appears to be communicating is different. I can't help but believe that it is because of the tweeting, the Instagram. Everything is truncated. It's just a word. It's an emoji. It is not a thoughtfully constructed sentence. Think back to Mr. Amazing Grace, the letters of John Newton, not the only Puritan to write long letters, but if you read his letters, wow, they go on for days, and they are beautifully written without a computer. He hand wrote these bad boys, and they are profound and thorough, and there are not any emojis needed to communicate the emotion behind the thought. You knew it from the clarity of the writing. That is disappearing. I can't say it's all gone, but it is disappearing. Let me give you a demonstration. This is one of the transcripts from Road Trip to Truth. John asked this person, and this is pretty typical. I did not pick the most extraordinary example. This is just one of many. What would you consider that group of cells to be? We're talking about the life issue. What do you think that blob is inside of the mother's stomach? Quote, a baby? A live baby? Anyway, well, yeah. Like, if there's a, if you see a, from, not so much. I think I'm going to get the medical references wrong, but I feel like once you see the baby with the scan or something that, like, it's going to be developed into a baby, I feel like once that's, like, already, you've already gone through the process and looking. So, I mean, you might as well, you know, like I said before, you might as well be pro-life, and, like, it doesn't matter what's in there. It's not. It doesn't matter. It's more, in my humble opinion. There's a heartbeat, or there's something that you could see that's going to be a live human being. Got that?
No.
No, you don't. Now, was I able to sort of follow him when I watched this encounter? Yeah, I could kind of get it because of intonation. But I would suggest to you, it is not my lack of inflection or body language that's failing to communicate well. This is just not good communication. Let me share with you a case in point. Because I shared that particular quote with somebody and they said, well, you know, you're not giving it a fair reading. If you would read it more like the way that it was spoken, which it seems to me, a word is enough these days in communication. Yeah? Do you want to go to the... What would you like me to get at the store? Food? That's supposed to be enough to communicate the list, apparently. And so I decided to simply pull up a very similar type of transcript with somebody asking somebody else questions. Now, I grant you, this person is a professional communicator, but nevertheless, this is from a Q&A session with Phil MacArthur. Phil MacArthur, I just blended them. I just breeded Phil Johnson and John MacArthur, which some people would actually suggest that maybe, you know, like, because they, it could, sorry, I'm doing it. What is cessationism? Now, this is John MacArthur's answer without notes. Cessationism is a term used to describe the truth that the gifts, the sign gifts, signs, wonders, miracles that were part of the ministry of the apostles and those associated with apostles have, oh great, the printer did weird things here. Let me just continue here. The opposite of it is called continuationism. However, that's not a very apt term because even people who say the gifts did not cease at the end of the apostolic era define whatever it is that's going on today as different than the apostolic gifts. You have to hear the difference. One has, you know, like subject and right, you know, the movement thing that, you know, goes, verbs, direct objects, correct adjectives, some sort of flow, some sort of thought. If this particular transcript from Road Trip to Truth is a fair representation of the communication style of many in the Gen Z. I didn't find this so much even a few years ago, but it seems far more rampant even today. What's the moral to this story? If you're trying to evangelize this generation, you need to understand how they communicate. Does this mean that we start to talk like them? You know, like, could and stuff, but I going, you know, no, I don't think that we should. But I've also noticed that, and this is my observation, that they are not able to receive a great deal of information at one time. I was witnessing to some students. I can't recall the campus. I think it happened. No, it happened on multiple campuses. It happened on Georgia Tech, GSU. I shared something, and I'm always mindful of how much information I am loading onto somebody. You don't want to do a huge dump of dialogue. It's difficult for anybody to listen to. They're distracted, etc. So I try to keep it short. Nevertheless, I was finding young people that were going, huh? I would say something that I thought was rather straightforward and that wasn't too complex. And I'd get kind of a glazed look. I'd put the microphone to their mouth and they'd go, I'm sorry, what? What part didn't you get? I don't know. Just, you know, like clocked out. Okay. Be mindful of that. We might have to keep our presentations very pithy, very pointed, and very, very Now, I'm the last one to call this generation dumb. In fact, I for a long time have said these kids are plenty smart. They are not doofuses, which I think the Latin would be doofi. They're not. It's just a different generation, and they've been trained differently, and we need to be mindful of it if we are going to communicate the gospel, you know, like, good. Speaking of this generation, this is what they're growing up with. Dodgeball, this is in Kanaga, the Calgary Herald. You'll love this. Thousands of academics are gathering in Vancouver for the annual Congress of the Humanities and Social Sciences. It's going on right now. It's called Oh, the Humanities. It's a series. The National Post showcases some of the more interesting research. Here it is. The games children play in schoolyards are horrible if you stop and think about them. Okay. Tag, for example, singles out one poor participant, often the slowest child, as the dehumanized it who runs vainly in pursuit of the quicker ones. Capture the flag is nakedly militaristic. British Bulldog has obvious jingoistic colonial themes. Another game, which has a different name in Canada, in America it's known as Backsides Up, involves deliberate imposition of corporal punishment on losers. A trio of education theorists will argue that dodgeball is not only problematic in the modern sense of displaying hierarchies of privilege based on athletic skill, but that it's outright miseducative. It doesn't educate rightly. You're kidding me. This hidden curriculum in dodgeball is nefarious. That is what is going on with our young people today. By the way, gentlemen, you should know they're also going to be outlawing chess in the schools. You know,
chess?
Yeah, you know, it's the conquering and the overthrowing of royalty. It's very militaristic. A jump rope, it oppresses low leapers. Swimming, water is clearly the oppressor. So all of those games, too, have got to go. Kids are growing up in a new world, aren't they? Do we change our message? No, but we might want to think about how we communicate it. Zoinks, Scoop, not to be oppressive or anything. This is Wretched Radio. So, you don't think that your sponsorship of a Tomorrow Club is worth it, huh?
One of the kids that came, you know, her parents were both alcoholics. The leader said, why don't you invite your mother to come? She started coming and she'd hear little pieces of the gospel and she started drinking a little bit less and started coming to the church, and the church started trying to help them. And believe it or not, even the father stopped drinking and the whole family has come to the Lord. Now this family operates the Tomorrow Club.
These stories are happening all over Eastern Europe. Poor villages, the Tomorrow Clubs invade. They meet with the kids every week. They disciple them. They preach the gospel to them. They have them memorize Bible verses. The kids get saved. The parents get saved. And the local church gets strengthened. Would you please consider supporting your own Tomorrow Club? $30 a month. 30 little disciples. You can do that at tomorrowclubs.org/wretched. tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
It was the great reformer Martin Luther who said, I can give you 95 reasons to buy Wretched Resources. Wretched's Reformer Sale. It's going on June 14th through the 16th. Tons of resources have been marked down. Books, DVDs, gospel booklets, and a whole lot more. And the best part? With every purchase, you'll receive a free On the Shoulders of Giants by reformer wannabe Todd Friel. This is an amazing sale, but don't take my word for it. John Calvin proclaimed, it's been foreordained before the foundation of the world that you will buy these wretched resources. Mark your calendars, because the sale only lasts 3 days. And whether you're Presbyterian or not, you should heed the words of John Knox, who said, give me wretched resources or I die. Wretched's Reformers Sale, 3 days only, June 14th through the 16th. Just visit wretched.org/sale. That's wretched.org/sale.
Alicia's a full-time nurse. On the weekend, she was running a pregnancy clinic in the highest abortion neighborhood in the United States, Queens, New York. More babies killed than there are born in this place. And she was raising the money on her own. And it's only open 1 day a week.
We could change that. There could be a pro-life center open 7 days a week, providing free ultrasounds for women by supporting preborn.org/wretched.
Preborn is very intentional and deliberate in providing free, loving, gospel-centered alternatives and ultrasounds to these young women in New York City. We're on it, man. It's not easy, and it's probably going to get a lot harder, I think.
Please join preborn.org/wretched in their effort to save babies and to save mommies through the gospel and stop this cycle. Would you please consider supporting preborn.org/wretched? preborn.org/wretched.
Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called the firstborn. Jesus was the firstborn from death, resurrected that we may have life, and he is the firstborn over all creation, the preeminent Son, through whom we are adopted as sons and daughters of God the Father.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Let's play!
You be the judge.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Order in the court.
This is Wretched Radio. It's time for Which One is Saddest? That's right, a plethora of stories for your consideration. I will share them as this happens to be a one-way communication that we are having. I guess the word would be conversation. Please don't correct me. Todd, you can't actually hear me. You know, there's a lot of stuff that goes on inside of my head. At any rate, your representative is our very own in-house Lutheran.
Joey?
I probably would have been put on medication in second grade if things were the way that they were.
Second grade might be optimistic.
Tony, are you ready for your most earnest responsibility? Which one is saddest? Story number one, please keep notes.
Sure, I can, you know.
There's a bunch of them.
With the story that
you might read. You're going to have to stop this now because I didn't realize how annoying it actually is. Here we go, story number one. Transgenderism no longer recognized as disorder by who are they? The World Health Organization, the newly approved version of their little mental and behavioral disorders guide, places issues of gender incongruence under a chapter on sexual health. Well, that word has to go too. Incongruence. No, because that indicates they present as one way, but they think another. So that's probably a bad choice of words, too. So the steamroller, it keeps on rolling. Transgender, no longer a disorder. Honestly, is there anything more obvious? Yes, there actually is, that God exists. That is the most obvious thing on the planet. But once you've suppressed that knowledge, suppressing the clear distinction of genders, that's a no-brainer. Story number two, this is probably the big one that's been going on around the internet. Most likely you've heard about the Dutch girl, 17 years old, requested to have herself euthanized. How tragic is that? It's totally tragic. This has been legal in the Netherlands since 2002. She took advantage of it. Why? Because she was very, very depressed. Why? This is just tragic on every level. She was raped when she was 11 and 12 and raped by two men when she was 14. She said she's been fighting for years and was now, quote, drained, and that she felt she had never been alive but was instead just surviving. She quit eating and drinking. She basically starved herself to death. Nobody really knows the details of how this went down. Claiming her suffering is unbearable, so the government said, that's fine. You can end your own life, young lady. Clearly, there's nothing that can help you heal. What would you expect from a post-Christian nation? Look, is this something that we should just gloss over like what's the matter with her? That's a big deal, wouldn't you say? That's just wickedness. And yet, as Christians, we know there is healing available. God can heal anybody's emotional scars, anybody's. The gospel is that powerful. Rightly applied theology heals a broken heart, heals somebody from having terribly black thoughts. The gospel contains hope. The gospel contains a perspective that can help somebody over time with theology rightly applied to heal. That is what biblical counseling is all about. This young lady, she did not avail herself of that. She took her own life, and the Netherlands went, fine by us. That's sad story number two. Sad story number three. Don't know if you're familiar with I think I'll just leave the name out. But there's a website that was developed in December 2015. They just revealed their visits and what people are searching for. That's right. They're searching for transgender information. Their transgender page at this particular website has doubled in a year. Mostly, the kids are between the ages of 11 and 15, trying to figure out their gender. 409 of the counseling sessions were with 11-year-olds or younger. 12,343 times their transgender page was viewed. And then they had 6,014 counseling sessions with children and young people about issues relating to gender and sexuality. That equates to 16 a day on average. Can only imagine the type of advice and information they're getting at this website. What a tragedy. We need to be in the game, church. We need to be talking about this issue. The culture that we live in has given kids permission, and it has given them the fuel to start pondering thoughts that they maybe never even had, to start questioning their gender. That's the reality. The only question is, will we speak up about it? Youth pastor, if I might, carefully, thoughtfully, with other adults in the room, that would be wisdom. You might want to start talking about this issue with your kids. How young? Well, it looks like under the age of 11. They're hearing about it elsewhere. This is one of those cases where if we don't speak up about it, the assumption is we have nothing to say about it. There's nothing that the church offers that's distinctly different. They have no perspective that participates in the arena of worldviews. We got to get on the game here, whether we like it or not, as distasteful as it might be. Sad story number four. Tony, are you keeping up?
No.
Are you sad?
Yes.
That's because you live in Minnesota. You've got seasonal affective disorder disease. Sad, duh. Because it's a little cloudy there. And it's true. New York Times comes up with a new phrase to replace fetal heartbeat. You know that the state of Louisiana, amongst others, there was another state that just passed some legislation. I can't keep up with it. It's happening a lot. That's really good news. Illinois, not so much. That's another one of our sad contenders. Nevertheless, in Louisiana, the fetal heartbeat law, it overwhelmingly passed 79-23. The Democratic governor signed it into law. The New York Times responding, not calling it a fetal heartbeat, but the war of words. I'm telling you, it's important.
Pulse.
Embryonic pulsing.
Yeah.
That's right. Embryonic pulsing. We don't call it a fetal heartbeat because, yikes, we're snuffing out a human heart. Yeah, I think life begins at conception, not when the heart stops beating. That, to me, is arbitrary. That's because somebody's heart doesn't need to beat for them to stay alive. Medicine has helped us with that argument. A machine can do that for you. So it's your heart doesn't give you life. It keeps you breathing and the blood flowing. Life is valued not because your heart beats, not because of consciousness, because everybody in a coma then could be snuffed out. It is because you are a human being, an image bearer of God. That is why humans have value. Lawmakers voted to ban the procedure after the pulsing of what becomes the fetus's heart can be detective, wrote the correspondent for the New York Times. Quote, the measure would require an ultrasound test for any woman seeking to terminate a pregnancy and forbid abortion if the test detects embryonic pulsing. NPR did that too, by the way, last week. I don't know if you remember that. Maybe it was 2 weeks ago. NPR, they actually sent out a guidance reminder to all the journalists. Hey, don't use the term heartbeat. Don't use that. That doesn't work well for us. Proponents refer to it as the fetal heartbeat, wrote the NPR piece of however they disseminated this guidance reminder. That is their term. It needs to be attributed to them if used in quotation marks and used in quotation marks if printed. Really? Scientific research conducted at the University of Oxford 2016 found that the unborn may develop signs of a heartbeat as soon as 21 days of pregnancy, adding that the bulk of the scientific literature describes these, quote, embryonic pulses as nothing other than, you guessed it, a heartbeat. Even DeFranco knew that. Thank you. Thank you very much. Sad story. Number five, Illinois lawmakers, here it is right here. They have passed legislation up to the governor with the intention of signing it that would basically remove any abortion restraints. Repeal of a ban on gruesome DNX or partial birth abortions. I won't read that to you because it's too disgusting. Penalties, nothing illegal. Minors would be able to obtain abortions without parental notice. It is one horrific piece of legislation. All right, Tony, that's number six. Yeah. Number five. I can't do no. This is modern math is what we got going on here. Four, heartbeat, embryonic pulsing. Kids looking for transgender information, the Dutch rape victim who takes her own life, or who stating transgender isn't a disorder anymore. Who is
the two that bug me the most, and they kind of tied, with a 17-year-old and the kids going to a website at, 11?
Yeah.
We've confused them that badly.
Yep.
Nice job.
And we wonder why they take their own lives. This is Wretched Radio.
Names of God. We learn a lot about God from the names given to him in Scripture. One name is Jehovah Jireh, God will provide. When we were dead in sin and unrighteousness, God provided the righteousness he requires in Jesus Christ, our substitute. If God has provided for our salvation, how much more is he able to meet our daily needs? This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Which type of evangelical are you? This is Wretched Radio. There are, at least three different types of evangelicals, all of whom could learn from dead guys. That's right. The Puritans would identify different camps of evangelicals and perhaps speak to them to help them in their evangelical maturity. This is from really J.I. Packer. It was kind of put into a different format by Justin Taylor, found it very helpful. Packer on what three types of evangelicals could learn from the Puritans. Listen very, very carefully. Which one are you? Evangelical number one, restless experientialists. That's right. You're a restless, what I just said. These are very familiar, and they are growing, I think, faster than any other camp of evangelicals, if you can call them that. These are people who love them feelings. They're grasping after novelties, entertainments, and highs, and valuing strong feelings above deep thoughts. This is the movement that is sweeping, let's call it evangelicalism. It's not just the NAR business, but it's mainstream evangelicals. People can worship physically, tangibly, how they choose to. But this is a lot of the emotive music, a lot of the pained look on their face, like they're really, really feeling God's presence. They're really being moved. The sermons, they aren't very deep at all. Typically a Bible verse, maybe, simply to be used as a springboard for life enhancement preaching. And it's all very emotive. How'd you feel? I really felt good about that. Oh, I just really felt the presence of God. Whatever's novel, whatever gets me a buzz. That's this group. They have little taste for solid study, humble self-examination, disciplined meditation, and unspectacular hard work in their calling and their prayers. They don't work hard at sanctification. These exuberant ones become uncritically credulous. Okay, I'll buy that. Sounds good. Makes me feel good. Reasoning that the more odd and striking an experience, the more divine it must be. Must be very spiritual. And they give very little scriptural study applied to that sort of presentation. They don't examine anything. The reason why the restless experientialists are lopsided is that they've fallen victim to a form of worldliness, a man-centered, anti-rational individualism which turns Christian life into a thrill-seeking ego trip. That's pretty critical, wouldn't you say? This is a group that is perpetually trendy. If it is pragmatic, they are on it. They love the new stuff. Which is why when you see something come down the evangelical stream that's a bit foul, don't be in a huge panic. I mean, it's worth considering and being aware of it, but it just keeps flowing down the stream out into the evangelical ocean dump that is pragmatism and trendiness. Whatever today's trend is, it'll end up right next to the prayer of Jabez, right next to the trend of you fill in the blank. There are dozens and dozens of them. They come, they go. What Puritan emphases can establish and settle restless experientialists? That's the big question. The Puritans, while dead, yet they speak. I think that they would say much. First, to help this person, the stress on God-centeredness, central to the discipline of self-denial. Not about how you feel, it's about what you are supposed to do. Feelings have a place, but remember, this is the group that's driven by feelings. It's all about feelings. It has nothing to do with thought. It has everything to do with emotions. Yeah. You serve God even when you don't feel like it. You love the Lord and obey even when it doesn't give you a high. Second, the insistence on the primacy of the mind. We are not transformed. We are not changed through our emotions. Our emotions change through our thinking. We are a cognitive faith, not an emotive faith primarily. Emotions follow thinking. At least they should. This group, they put emotions first. So give me the buzz. I don't care how goofy and bizarre it gets. Just dim them lights, turn on the synthesizer, and make me feel it. Sorry, that's not what the Puritans would suggest. Third, the demand for humility, patience, and steadiness at all times. The Holy Spirit's main ministry is not a thrill ride, but to give you Christ-like character. That's what they would say to these folks. You've got the emphasis in the wrong syllable. Fourth, the recognition that feelings, they go up, they go down, and God tries us by leading us through wastes of emotional flatness. Sometimes God will let that happen intentionally to grow you, to change you, to fix you. You come out on the other side more like Him. So don't be thinking that, oh, I'm not really feeling it today. Or you got some work to do to figure out why. Why are your emotions flatlining? That's something that should not be ignored. But God uses those things. It doesn't mean you got to go find another buzz to get you whipped into a frenzy. And that's what this group pursues perpetually. Fifth, the singling out of worship as life's primary activity. It's not. It's great. It's not the only thing that the Christian life is about. Six, the Puritans would say to this emotive group of evangelicals, the stress on our need of regular self-examination. How you doing in the sin department, not the emotions department? Seventh, the realization that sanctified suffering bulks large in God's plan for His children's growth in grace. These people try to avoid it, ignore it, gloss over it, feel through it. Mm-mm. God wants to grow you in grace. That's evangelical group number one. I'm going to save evangelical group number two because that's probably the group that you're in. Group number three, in the meantime, disaffected deviationists is what this group is called. The casualties and dropouts of the modern evangelical movement. In other words, false converts, many of whom have now turned against it to denounce it as a neurotic perversion of Christianity. Their latter end is worse than the first. These are people, they went, they didn't get the buzz ran out, they didn't have the experience, something bad happened, and now they're bitter backsliders. And this group is growing. Why? Well, that's what Are You a Rotten Fish is all about, available at wretched.org/fish. They become disillusioned about the evangelical point of view, turn their back on it. It let them down. How often do we hear that? Hey, I went to a lot of different conferences, man. I closed my eyes and raised my hands a lot. And now a loved one is sick. What's up with that, God? And they're out. Some leave it for intellectual reasons. That's why this dumbing down and this mere Christianity is not helpful at all. judging that what was taught them was so simplistic as to stifle their minds and so unrealistic and out of touch with facts as to be unintentionally dishonest. Others were led to expect that as Christians they would enjoy health, wealth, trouble-free circumstances. They feel like they're the victim of a confidence trick. They're hurt. They're angry. And frankly, who can blame them? What would the Puritans say to them? Well, I think they'd start with asking, would you consider yourself to be a good person? Because they actually need to be evangelized. They would start with the mystery of God. God was, is, and always will be inscrutable in his dealings with those who trust and love him, so that losses and crosses, the benefits of going through a hard season are beyond what we can imagine for ourselves. God uses sin sinlessly. He uses the things he hates to accomplish the things he loves we'd never imagine for ourselves. And that's profound. So if you've professed to be a Christian, you're going through something hard. Well, it's through God's providence and ordination that he is allowing that, permitting that, or even causing that, if it's not sinful, to do something greater for you. Second, they would remind these people of the love of God. Just because you're going through something hard doesn't mean that God doesn't love you. That is a lie from the devil. Third, they would remind them of salvation. The Christ who puts away sins is leading us through the world to a glory for which we are being prepared. He's fitting us for heaven so that we can enjoy it more. Spiritual conflict. Fourth, it's a reality. Fifth, God will protect you. He will allow one evil to touch our lives to thereby shield us, but thereby shields us from even greater evils. Sixth, this is all being done for the glory of God. That's what the Puritans would teach to this disaffected group. However, there's a third group. Maybe you have not been relating to the aforementioned two, but perhaps this will capture your attention. Entrenched intellectualists. You're next on Wretched Radio.
Thank you for joining us. Glad you had spent part of your day listening to Wretched Radio. Road Trip to Truth is our new video series, it's coming, hosted by John Fabares, son of Pastor Mike Fabares. These episodes will be tackling the tough issues that millennials struggle with on their home turf at college campuses. Road Trip to Truth is a chance to reach millennials with the gospel, and you get to be a fly on the wall and get an understanding of how to share your faith with this generation. But we could use your help. Would you help support Road Trip to Truth by becoming a Wretched monthly gospel partner? Go to wretched.org/donate for all the details. wretched.org/donate. And let's get the gospel out to this depressed, anxious, suicidal, and lost generation. So if you are able, please go to wretched.org/donate and become a Wretched monthly gospel partner. And let's reach millennials together. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Story after story after story of those people who have been saved and trained and given a Bible from Bible League International.
By 12 years of age, this young boy, Ahmed, had been recruited to be a suicide bomber. He came to place his faith in Jesus Christ. He has a burden to take the gospel to young men in his age group who are sold out to violent Islam. Toddy's led about 50 young men to Christ.
That's the voice of Michael Wolver from Bible League International, sat in studio with me sharing story after story after story of lives affected because they heard the gospel and they received the word of God because of Bible League International and your support. $5 a Bible to Ahmed. How many could you send? Please consider supporting Bible League International at wretched.org/Bible. Wretched.org/Bible.
Obeying the Great Commission has never been easier. So far, you've given away over 200,000 copies of our evangelistic booklet, What Time is Purple? And we couldn't be more thrilled with that number. Well done. But we are far from finished. Not to be greedy, but our goal is to give away 1 million copies of What Time is Purple? Perfect for college students struggling to find out what the truth is. Visit wretched.org/purple today and order as many copies as you promised to give away. You just pay for the shipping. And together, we can reach 1 million students with the gospel. 1 million. If you're a ministry or a church group that would like to pass out What Time is Purple, we'd love to send you a bunch of copies. Email Al Yerkes at al@wretched.org for more information. And join us in obeying the Great Commission. Visit wretched.org/purple for your copies of What Time is Purple today. That's wretched.org/purple.
Books of the Bible. Philippians was written by Paul from a Roman prison. It is often called the Epistle of Joy for its encouraging tone. In this letter, Paul encourages the Philippians to live in a manner worthy of the gospel by steadfastness and humility in Christ and cheerful obedience to God, who is working in us to bring about his good pleasure. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Are you evangelical number three? This is Wretched Radio. J.I. Packer identifying three camps of evangelicals for a message from the Puritans. That's right. Figure out which one of these evangelicals you are inclined to be, even if you're not fully in a particular camp. Do you maybe have a foot in that camp? You'll recall the emotive evangelicals. They sure do love their feelings. Morris Alpert has never been heard by this group of evangelicals. They love the feelings. They live for the feelings. That is all their walk is about. And so
it's
these
not
poor
more
people,
than a feeling?
You know, Joey, I sure wish that you could come up with something catchy, because I just don't think that that could ever be a song. But that's just me. What do I know about such things? Musical. They trip from one event, one conference, one worship service to the next to get their engines revved. They're tired. They've got to get tired at some point. And if they stop and think for a moment, they've got to start asking, is this what Christianity is about? A buzz? Second group of people would be the people who really did not experience, maybe they never heard the true gospel, or they went to an evangelical silly center, or they went to a church that didn't tackle issues, that didn't have answers, origin questions, issues of sexuality. Like, these aren't my favorite subjects these days. But if we don't talk about them, the world will. The world is after your kids, happy to give them a little bit of sage advice from Satan about gender and sexuality. We go, it's kind of off-putting. Don't really like to talk about that. And kids conclude, we got nothing to say. Then they run off to university, and these studied university professors, they sure seem like they've studied the issue and they've got it figured out. I'll listen to them. We got to be in the game. Church, those people end up leaving the faith, and they have left in droves. I meet them all the time. But there is a third group of evangelicals, and there's a pretty good chance you might find yourself in this group. Brace yourself. This could sting a little bit. These are the entrenched intellectuals. In other words, you love theology. You love studying theology. You love sermons, especially when they're really rich with biblical teaching. You love it. I know I do. That means this has my attention. However, they present themselves as rigid, argumentative, critical Christians, champions of God's truth, for whom orthodoxy is all in all. You just live to uphold and defend your point of view. This is the danger of this particular camp. I know it. I've been there. I've done that. I can still do that. I see it all the time in myself and in others. People, I don't know which came first, the critical nature or the building up of knowledge. It puffs up. I guess we have our answer. Knowledge puffs up. And it makes you want to battle over what is correct theology. And it has its place. But we can be snarky about it. We can be mean about it. We can see others as just not checking every box, and therefore they are out. Here's another one that we are. Here's a couple of issues we're going to have to figure out real soon. The social justice issue. Going to have to figure this out. Is it this camp or that camp? Heretic, Orthodox. Which is it? Or are there gradations in the social justice spectrum? People with whom we can actually have, you know, fellowship because they're not communists. We got to get this figured out soon, because it seems that where we're at in this entire conversation about social justice issues is you're either a social justice warrior, a.k.a. heretic, or you're on the right side of the issue. That's it. I think we better get that figured out and adjusted pretty quick, because I know that there are people who are put in the social justice warrior camp. They haven't changed an iota. And you've listened to those men preach for years and followed their instruction, and they haven't changed a bit. And yet, it seems that it's set up for this side versus that side. I think we better study the issue to determine, can somebody have a different perspective on some of these issues on social justice and still be, you know, a Christian? Second, complementarianism. Get ready. The conversation that is going on right now, a strict or a broad somebody who is a complementarian, who believes that these roles of men and women, because of the implications, because of its grounding in the creation order, it's expansive. It's not just narrow. It's not just, well, you just can't call yourself pastor. Those would be the new complementarians. They're the very narrow complementarian. It's just that. That's the only issue about men. Everything else, fair game. Okay. Can we maybe have division over that? At some point, perhaps, it's possible. Because the reformers would tell us, a church that has a woman as the pastor is not actually a church. It doesn't even qualify. So could it come to that? Yeah. But could there be people, I'm starting to do more reading on this from cbmw.org, just a refresher on the roles of women in issues like Sunday school teaching. What about leading worship, collecting the offering, all of these areas? There's going to be some people that are Orthodox that are actually going to be in heaven with us who disagree on some of these issues. Not so for this camp of evangelicals. You don't agree with me in totality. You are out of here. They are the entrenched intellectualists. And we have much to learn from the Puritans. There's little warmth about them. Relationally, remote, experiences do not mean much to them. Winning the battle for mental correctness is their one great purpose. I would also suggest this is classic immaturity. It is. It's just immaturity. They see that in our anti-rational, feeling-oriented, instant gratification culture, conceptual knowledge of divine things is undervalued. And we need to make sure that this gets corrected. And we won't tolerate anything that doesn't align with everything that we believe. Now, if that's kind of annoying you, this might actually be addressing you. Yes, we fight for orthodoxy. Yes, we even fight for our distinctives. Yes, we even fight for the small tertiary things. I'm happy to battle over all of those things because I know I'm right. I'm sorry, did I say that out loud? That sometimes the filter, it just doesn't quite turn on when you want it to. Of course we do. But that doesn't mean that anybody who doesn't agree with everything is out. I see that on the blogosphere, so many podcasts. Yikes. A pastor who's been preaching faithfully for decades, one minor misstep. Gotcha! We don't like to criticize this guy, but He did something we wouldn't do. Is it about orthodoxy? No, doesn't matter. What would the Puritans say to us? First, true religion claims the affections as well as the intellect. But first things first, intellect first. But that doesn't mean at the exclusion of affections. Richard Baxter dealt with that a lot. Second, theological truth is for practice. William Perkins, he called it the science of living to God. That theology isn't just about amassing knowledge. It is about changing us. It is about infiltrating every little crack and crevice of our lives to make us different people, to live differently than the world. Theology is not a mere pursuit of knowledge and information. It should change us. Third, conceptual knowledge kills if one does not move on from knowing notions to knowing the realities to which they refer. In other words, our theology should be finding its way into the decisions that we make, the relationships that we have. Fourth, goodwill and good works are explicitly called for in the gospel, living it out. That your theology and your theological knowledge translates into love for people. Fifth, the Spirit is given to lead us into close companionship with others in Christ. God likes unity. Why? Because the Trinity lives in unity, in perfect harmony, in perfect love. And when we don't, now that means even the people with whom we disagree on secondary and tertiary issues. Sixth, the discipline of discursive meditation is meant to keep us ardent and adoring in our love with God. The Puritans, they were humble-minded, theologically profound and sound, but also warm-hearted. They would have diagnosed Christian intellectuals today as spiritually stunted, having zeal without genuine knowledge because our theology isn't affecting anything but our ability to argue. Question, whichever camp you might find yourself in, do you possibly, like I, need to make any adjustments? And if you just said no, then you really need an adjustment. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.